Open your Bible to the book of Judges. I might say this account is definitely showing what happens when a nation and a society gets away from God and how bad things get. The first part of the book of Judges tells us that the period of history that we're dealing with was a period when a generation rose up that did not know the Lord and did not serve God and did not carry out God's commandments. God didn't abandon the nation, but the nation really was on a low level compared to what it could have been. So when you look at this, this is not an example to follow as far as the way they lived and the things they did, but it's showing how that they struggled with the many difficulties that they had because of their not being blessed of God. And the blessings of Deuteronomy chapter 28, when God told them that if they would serve him and obey his commandments, they'd be blessed in every phase of their lives. That's not here. So just kind of tuck that in your mind a little bit, because these experiences here are not references for us to follow, but they are definitely stories for us to learn about what can happen when things are not in order with God. Well, if you look at the three chapters, only 103 verses, but you can see how that things happen. It began with a Levite sojourning in verse 1 of chapter 19, and that's telling. What it's telling us is that the Levites were not ministering, they were wandering. And because God had designated places for them to be in to serve the rest of the country spiritually, but since the country is not following God spiritually, they're not doing their job. You just have a Levite sojourning when he ought to be ministering. The second thing is you find a sin. The immoral act of one person begins this whole snowball effect that winds up with over 65,000 people being killed. And a lot of times people don't think that, sin is a problem. They say it's my life and I can live it the way I want to live it. But we know that sin is a bigger factor than man will even admit, because you go back to the Garden of Eden, and that little bitty sin was a tremendous impact upon the entire world and the human race. So God warns us about thinking that sin can somehow just be dismissed, or we can get past it without any problem, and we can just tuck it under. But God says, be sure your sin will find you out. We're living in a time, too, in this passage where there was no king in Israel. Everybody's just doing their own thing. And this is something that people think is a great thing. You know, live in a country where no matter what your lifestyle is, well, that's your right. You can do whatever you want to do. But that proves to be a false way of thinking also. So with absolute liberty, everybody being able to do what they want to do, this created a setting, a seedbed, you might say, for things that are not right to really take root and take off. And that's what it is when there is no authority, no moral authority. And somehow our country has come to believe that moral authority, which would go back to God's word, is wrong. It's against democracy, and we cannot have that. So there was no putting away of evil in this period of time. There was just permissiveness, everybody doing their own thing. And so as you see how deep this thing got and how tragic it became, that's where it all started from, the idea that it's our lives, we can do what we want to do. The fear of God wasn't there. The The laws of God were not being followed, and so things began to happen. So this man, this sojourning Levite, he marries a woman. A concubine is a lower level wife. Again, God does not recommend that. That's not a part of God's plan, but it was a common practice in the world at that time, and that's the way they did. But she wasn't true to him. She was, so after she committed sin against him, she ran away to her father's house. Now, in all of these verses, we're not going to be able to read them, so we're going to have to make a story out of it and just kind of follow the storyline. Well, I think that would be a normal thing to do. She's probably afraid that her husband will catch up with her because there was a legal right at that time that if this happened, why, the husband could really come down on him hard, even perhaps their life being taken away from him. It could be considered a capital crime. And so 4 months went by, and her husband decides that he wants to bring her back home again and start things over again. So in verse 3, he went to where she was and spoke friendly to her to bring her home again, and he had his means whereby that could be done, his servant, their traveling means. And so when the father of this woman saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. So think about the human dynamics here, that this was a real problem in the marital section. Finally, the guy says, well, I'm going to put it behind us. We're going to go ahead with our marriage. And so he goes and speaks well to her. And what a relief that is to her. And then her father, his father-in-law, is certainly relieved also. Because if you can think about it, they probably were expecting the worst. And now that it looks like that, you know, things are good and we can get on with our lives and everybody is able to forgive, I think that figures into the days that followed this, in which that the father-in-law continued to constrain this man to stay because he was very much appreciative of this man's being willing to forgive and to accept his daughter again. So the father-in-law continues to constrain him, and this went on to the fifth day, and finally at the, I guess in about the afternoon, it tells us in verse 8, the man decides, I've got to go. You know, I've been here long enough, and I've just got to go back home again, and so it really was a bad decision for him to leave this time of the day because he would have to spend the night somewhere. There were no motels, hotels, anything like that, campgrounds. And the way that people would do, they would see a stranger and invite him into their home to spend the night. It was hospitality. So that's what he was relying upon, that he could find hospitality somewhere and spend a night and then go on the next day. So that's what he did. And of course it was, as you see in verse 11, the day was far spent. And so his servant says, well, here is the city of the Jebusites, so let's lodge here. Now the Jebusites were heathens. They should have been driven out. They were not. And so they were a thorn in the side of Israel. But the man himself, his master, said in verse 12, no, we don't want to do that because this is the city of a stranger. And he felt that there was all kinds of danger there for an Israelite to go into the city of a stranger, not knowing what would happen and probably expecting that the worst could happen. So in verse 13, he wanted to move on to come to a city of Israel, something that would be of his own nation, thinking that he could find safety there. And of course, there ought to be expectations that where you have God's people, you could find help from God's people. There should be a difference in the minds of people about what their treatment would be at the hands of a Christian versus a person that has no fear of God. So that's what they did. And when the sun's going down, while they arrive at Gibeah, which belonged to the tribe of Benjamin. So that part of their objective is now reached. And they go into Gibeah, but nobody offered him hospitality, as you see in verse 15. Then comes an old man in verse 16 from out of the field. He'd been working in a field. And he also was from Ephraim, but he was just sojourning there in Gibeah. And the Benjamites, this was a part of their inheritance. So in verse 17, he sees this man, and he recognizes him to be a stranger. So he said, where are you going, and where'd you come from? And so the man says, well, we're passing from Bethlehem, Judah, toward the side of Mount Ephraim. In the 18th verse, from thence am I, and I went to Bethlehem, Judah, but I am now going to the house of the Lord, and there is no man that receiveth me to house. So circumstances are just not well for him at this time. And he says that I don't have anybody that's offered me any hospitality at all. So in a wicked time, you can see that compassion is pretty limited. There's not much interest in what's going on. Everybody's kind of all self-oriented about themselves. So wherever there is, you back up again, a society where the respect for God is gone, then the same thing happens with the respect for human life. Human life doesn't seem to be worth much anymore today. People get mad at one another, they shoot one another. And that's just the natural response, it seems to be, in our day and time. And so there was nobody that cared about him. And a lot of indifference and coldness. And of course, Christ said in Matthew 24:12 that because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. So the elderly gentleman knew this was a dangerous situation for him to just stay in the street. And he probably knew that this place was not a very good place to be. And so he invited him to come into his house. And the old man said in verse 20, peace be with thee, howsoever let all thy wants lie upon me, only lodge not in the street. So he brought him into his house in verse 21 and gave provender unto the asses, and they washed their feet and did eat and drink. So that's all good up to this point. There is a duplicate story of this. One is very parallel, is Genesis chapter 19. And that is where that the angels went down to the city of Sodom. And they were out in the streets, and Lot saw him. He said, no, you don't want to lodge out in the streets. So he invited them to come into his house. The same thing had happened here. And pretty well, the same thing happened again that happened back then. As you see in verse 22, that when they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about and beat at the door and spake to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring forth the man that came into thine house that we may know him. So here's the homosexuals now. They are demanding that this stranger be brought out to them so they can do their vile thing with him. The same thing happened in Genesis 19. People say, well, you know, these people are harmless. No, they're not. And you have to study the Bible to see the colors of things, because sin is not harmless. I don't care who it is. If sin gets into our lives, it's going to cause us to do things we would never do otherwise. And we can never think that we can give our life over to sin and then we're just going to be a good person. And we'll never do anything bad to anybody else. But when you read Romans chapter 1, and I am so amazed at people that declare to be saved that they have no fear of the immoral slide in our country. It's, well, you know, I don't agree with it and I wouldn't do it, but that's their lives. They can do what they want to do. I hear that all the time on the news by even conservative announcers. Well, I don't agree with that, but that's their life. They can do what they want to do, but just don't bother my kids. And so the idea that, you know, there's no harm to it beyond what the person's doing, that's on them. But it spills out. And God tells us that a little leaven leavens a whole lump. And so sin, when it arises in society, it's because that people have turned their back on God. And God is no longer influencing them. Have you ever wondered why there's so many people's minds messed up about whether they're even a man or a woman? Well, the influence of God is not there. And even nature itself has just been all twisted up. So, of course, this would prompt great dispute and argument in our time. But that's what it is. The influence of God is not there upon mankind. And people are, their minds are just drifting in the way that sin and Satan would want them to go. And so therefore, this thing takes root. Well, we can see that the man went out the same as Lot did. He went out and said, no, don't do this. Don't do this. The man did the same thing Lot did. He offered his daughter unto them and also the concubine. And so Lot had two daughters. Well, here's two again. And we'll just let you do what you want to do with them, but don't do anything to this man. You know, that just doesn't sound right. I don't know whether that sent up a red flag in your mind or not, but how in the world can somebody think that this is an acceptable out? That this is somehow going to solve a problem. And how come now all of a sudden that this daughter and this woman are just a piece of garbage to throw out to a bunch of mad dogs? Well, there's so many things in this story that don't make sense. And that's because of the fact that people's minds are off center with God. In our society, there's so many things that just don't make sense. And that's because people's minds are off center with God. Well, you notice that the response was the same as it was in Genesis 19. They would not hearken to him. In Lot's day, they tried to break down the door after Lot had shut it. And then the angel smote him with blindness. But the man takes his concubine and pushes her out the door. And the daughter doesn't go out, but just a concubine. And of course, she's abused all night. And then, as you would find, in verse 26 through 28, they abused her to the point that she died. Well, he comes out, he finds her dead, and picks her up, takes her home, cuts her in 12 pieces, and sends a piece to each of the tribes of Israel. Never had there been anything like that ever done before. And so this alarmed, this got the attention of Israel. In verse 30, and when they began their inquiry, they were just after the guy that did this. They didn't know this backstory. Well, when they came to the guy that did it, he told them the backstory. And of course, he, you know, in verse 5 of chapter 20, he said, well, the men of Gibeah rose against me and beset the house round about upon me by night and thought to have slain me. So he makes it a self-defense story on his part. And then he said, my concubine, why, she was collateral damage, you know. And so they did this to her. They forced And they forced her, and she's dead. And so I cut her in pieces and sent her throughout all the country. So you know the wickedness that I'm talking about here. Give your advice and counsel in verse 7. Well, this changes the whole picture now, and everybody realizes what they're up against. So they decide they're going to go to Benjamin. They're going to demand the guilty people to be brought out, that they can put them to death. And so they get a large group of people. And in verse 11, they have gathered against the city. And the whole nation now has come together, which we'll find out later on in the chapter. There were some who didn't join up, and that was to their detriment. But when they came to the tribe of Benjamin in the 12th verse, they asked them, demanded them, to deliver up the people that had done this, that we may put them to death and put away the evil from Israel. But Benjamin decided to be a sanctuary tribe. They were going to be a sanctuary place for these people. So they refused, and they rather gather themselves together to go out and fight. And the Benjamites actually set the battle in motion. It wasn't Israel, the others of Israel, but it was the Benjamites that became the aggressor here to fight against the Israelites. And so the Benjamites were tremendously outnumbered. They only had 26,000 men, and then they did have 700 marksmen who were capable. They were left-handed people, and they could sling stones at a hairbreadth and not miss. So that made them extremely dangerous in battle. And the men of Israel were 400,000 men, but the Benjamites were only 26,000. So you can see a tremendous lopsided number. But when the battle begins, and this is something you have to follow this, how this all happened, they did ask God if they should go up against Benjamin, and the Lord said yes, and Judah shall go up first. Well, that battle went very bad against the people of Judah, and there were 22,000 men that Benjamin destroyed. Well, the verse 22, you find that the people of Israel encouraged themselves, and again, they in verse 23, they went up and wept before the Lord and said, "Shall we go up to battle again?" The Lord said, "Go." So the children of Israel went again, and they lost again. There was a tremendous loss of 18,000 men. So you've got 40,000 men now, 40,000 casualties. And somebody would say, "Well, the Lord said, go. So why is this happening?" Well, here's what you have to take into account. It was God's law originally, before this ever happened, that if the Sodomites existed in the land, or even idol worshipers, that Israel was to destroy them, get them out of the land. So it was God's will for this judgment to occur. So it's just like if you have something written in the Bible, should I do this? And you ask God, should I do this? You say, yeah, I'll do it. But that doesn't mean that things are right with you to where God's going to help you. So that's where Israel was. They were not right with God, but they were asking, what should we do? And God says, this is what you're to do, because that's the law that I've given you. But then in verse 26, it changes. All the children of Israel and all the people went up and came into the house of the Lord and wept and sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until even, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. There's what it took for their sins to be covered, to where God would now help them. But until they would get right with God in this matter, until they would offer burnt offerings for their sin, God wasn't going to help them to judge the sins of another. So that's where the game changer was, is when it's the same one that you find back in 1 Samuel chapter 7, when Israel had 20 years gone by, the Philistines just trodden them down, and it says that for 20 years, the children of Israel lamented after the Lord. In other words, God, why aren't you helping us? Why aren't you doing this? Why are we in this? And finally, Samuel came along and said, look, if you want God to help you, put away your idols and present yourself to God. And they did. And when Samuel offered up the offerings for their sin, as they were turning to God, seeking God's forgiveness, God turned the tide on the Philistines. And it was Ebenezer. Hitherto the Lord hath helped us. So it wasn't until the people themselves got right with God in this matter, wanting God to forgive them of their sins, it wasn't until that point occurred that God helped them. So I think we can see a difference in wanting to know what the Lord wants to be done. And a lot of times people want spiritual accomplishments because it's good. It's good for our lives. But there's a difference in that and actually wanting to be right with God ourselves. And until we get both of them, why, then we're not going to have God's help. And so that's where the game changer occurred. And now when they go out, they have a different strategy. You can see how that they have a battle plan. And this time, they only lost about 30 men. And Benjamin, I want you to notice, just connect three verses here. Verse 26, it says, they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. Verse 35, the Lord smote Benjamin before Israel. And verse 43, they trode them down with ease. So that's how the whole picture changed. When they got right with God themselves and God got into the picture, then it was a quick, decisive battle of Benjamin being put down for what they had done. So it's not a mystery as to why they had two tremendous days of loss in battle, and then why the next time it was a complete turnaround. It's because that the people themselves got right with God. Well, now you find that there's only 600 men left of the tribe of Benjamin, and all the rest of the tribe of Benjamin has been destroyed now. Now you say, oh, that's a horrible, it is a horrible thought. But let me remind you again, this is how things got in Israel when Israel was not following God. When Israel was following God, you didn't have this. This was not there. But now you see that a whole tribe has been destroyed with the exception of 600 men. And they have fled to a remote area. Well, in verse 21, they began to have some second thoughts about how severe their vengeance had been upon the tribe of Benjamin. And they began to think about, what can we do? As you see in verse 2 of chapter 21, that the people came to the house of God and abode there till even before God, and lifted up their voices and wept sore. And they're really concerned now about one tribe being wiped out. Well, they had made a vow in verse 1 of chapter 21, there shall not any of us give his daughter unto Benjamin to wife. So they were really coming down hard on Benjamin. And they said, nobody. And this was a promise they had made before God, that they would not give their daughters unto Benjamin to wife. Now, Benjamin's all men, no wives. So in verse 7 of chapter 21, how shall we do for wives for them that remain, seeing we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give them of our daughters to wives? They've got a problem now. Then they said, okay, What is there of the tribes of Israel that came not up to Mizpah to the Lord? Behold, there came none into the camp, and it were in verse 8, from Jabesh-Gilead to the assembly. For the people were numbered, and behold, there were none of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead there. And the congregation sent thither 12,000 men of the valiantest, and commanded them, saying, Go and smite the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead with the edge of the sword, with the women and the children. And they were after virgins, and they found 400 virgins that were there. And, of course, they still had a shortage of 200 wives. But in verse 15 of chapter 21, the people repented them for Benjamin because that the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. Now they're sorry that they have really reduced the whole tribe down to this small amount. They had gone on record, I was looking for the verse, where that anyone who would not join the campaign, that they would be killed in Israel. That was somewhere along the line. Yes, verse 5 of chapter 21, the children of Israel said, Who is there among all the tribes that came not up with the congregation of unto the Lord? For they made a great oath concerning him that came not up to the Lord to Mizpah, saying, He shall surely be put to death. So everybody was required that they take part in this. Now, this is not the only time that that they felt that they had to be totally together. Back in chapter 5 of Judges in verse 23, there was another occasion where some of the Israelites did not join in the battle, and they said, Curse be Miraz. And so those that didn't take part were under a curse. So now they had made a oath that anyone that would not join this cause, they were to be killed. And that's why that they went against the people of Jabesh-Gilead and only spared the 400 virgins that were there. You say, oh, that's so harsh. I told you in the beginning, this is not an example of what we're to do. This is a story of how bad things get when a society and a nation, even though they're mixing up God's law in this about going against the homosexuals, they've got that in the picture, yet the whole thing is just not the way it should have been if they had followed God. So don't get thrown off by the terribleness of the circumstances, because these terrible circumstances would have never been had Israel as a nation followed the Lord. Well, they still had a need for 200 wives, and so they come up with this other plan. Let the Benjamites kidnap themselves some wives. And so they knew of an event that was going to happen in Shiloh, in which that the young ladies would come out for this event. And so they told the men of Benjamin who needed a wife, go out there and capture you a wife. Well, that certainly doesn't fit with our way of thinking of romance, does it? None of this does, but that's what happened. They went out, and those that didn't have a wife, well, they just took them a wife and went home. That, again, is sort of a little different than perhaps maybe you did when you got you a wife. But anyway, now the tribe of Benjamin, 600 men, they now have wives. They can now repopulate again. But the summary of the whole story, verse 25 of Judges 21, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. It writes a pretty horrible story. No absolutes, everything relative to what everybody wanted to do on their own. That's the way they live. But even after this horrible event took place, they still are not solving their problem. Their problem is everybody just doing what's right in their own eyes. Their problem is they're not seeking unto and following God. So often we see people alarmed and waging war against some evil in society, but don't become concerned about the root cause as to why it's going on. If you think about all the murders that are going on every day, if you turn the news on, there's somebody been killed. And it usually occurs in the middle of the night, out on the street somewhere. And when the, and I'm not making fun, I'm just kind of giving you a picture here. The person gets killed, a lot of times, he was such a wonderful guy. He had kids by three or four different women, never married. And there were other men involved with these women too. And just somehow this poor innocent guy winds up dead. Well, you know what's going on here. You know that because of the immoral living, there is jealousies, there's hatreds, there is all of these mixed emotions that are negative going on in the minds of people. That's the way they solve it. So gun violence. Oh, got to do something about gun violence. But what about the immoral living? What about the root cause of it? That's never mentioned. That's never even talked about as to why people get their lives in such a state to where they settle their issues by killing one another. That's never mentioned. It's just the gun. You know, that poor old gun. He's such a cruel person. So not concerned about the root cause. Every person doing what is right in their own eyes. But unless man is reconciled to God by the true gospel of Jesus Christ and is striving to be obedient to the standards of God's word, there is no victory over sin, because sin can only be defeated in the hearts of men with the truth. So there's nothing that cannot be overcome if people buckle down and let the Lord lead them. It makes an entirely different story of life. And so the absence of holiness, the absence of godliness, the absence of people seeking to please God, and therefore their lives were far from the mark of godliness, and oh, the suffering. You know, God says, be sure your sins will find you out. So it's a tragic picture, but that's one thing about the Bible. God tells it like it is. And we're not given a whitewash. We're just told exactly what happened. We thank you for being here. That'll conclude our Sunday school.